Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Oh, hello, everybody. Nice to see you there. I'm Ray Harkins, and you've joined the 100 Words or Less podcast family by deciding to download and listen to this episode. I'll bet you didn't think you were going to do that, but yes, now I know you. I've tracked your IP. No, I'm just kidding, but thank you for listening. And the guest this week is Mr. Sam Means. He used to play in a band called The Format, and he also does his own solo project, self-titled titular by his name, so Sam Means. And he also does an amazing, amazing merch company called Hello Merch, and then he also does a brand off of that called Hello. And basically, he's just a very well-rounded individual. He's got a family, got that thing going on, and it's a very compelling story because, you know, sometimes I always get worried, and even though I don't know these people, I get worried when people have dedicated their lives to a creative art. Sometimes it's hard to kind of make those transition points into different things, a regular life, a 9-to-5 job or whatever. And sometimes people flounder. And I love it when people are able to take that creative energy that they had in the band and creating music and be able to apply it to different areas of their life. It's awesome stuff. So that is our guest this week. And, you know, let's get some business stuff out of the way, right? And I promise it's not heavy business. It's a nice, light, fun business. So check out the show, 100wordspodcast.com, the website. You'll be able to listen to past episodes. If this is your first one, thanks for checking it out. So we've got like 190 some odd episodes that you could dive into. And I love it. I love it when people email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com, and tell me some stuff. Tell me what episodes they've liked, what other guests would be interesting for me to potentially speak to. So I love all those ideas. So keep them coming. I appreciate that. And please use the Amazon affiliate code in the show notes or on the website. Basically, all that does is give us a kickback. You shop at Amazon, your prices stay the same. Nothing changes beyond the fact that we, the show, gets a kickback. So if you want to contribute that way by not donating any money whatsoever, do that and it will help the show. I appreciate that. And plus, it'll give my wife a reason to be like, okay, Ray's making a little money off this thing. I guess I'll leave him alone. He can be absent from our family for a few hours by doing this interview or whatever. So anyways, without further ado, here is, and you know what? I always say that, without further ado. I'm trying to get off some verbal crutches that I use, but it's like, it's so easy to transition into every single interview that way. Without further ado, all right, how about this? Hey, let's talk to Sam. How about that? Does that sound okay? All right, we'll try other things on for size, but here's Sam, and I'll talk to you after the show is over. I want to say that I saw the format at, you guys played a Bamboozle, didn't you? Like when it was in New Jersey, if I'm correct?
Yeah, I think we played a couple.
Okay.
And it may have, yeah, maybe once when it was back when it was called Skate and Surf.
Right. That's correct. Skate and Surf. That's what I meant
and
to
then,
say.
Yeah. And then once, and then I think right the next year, maybe the year after when it was officially Bamboozle. Actually, no, I don't even think we did. I think it was, yeah, I think it was always Skate and Surf when we played it.
Yeah. I think you're totally right. That's, it was at the Asbury Park where, you know, you guys played. I just remember watching you. I was there. I worked at a record label at the time, and I went to see you guys, not for any sort of signing purposes, because I worked at a metal record label, which clearly you guys would not be at home on.
Yeah.
But you played it was such a weird vibe, because it was like a little side theater sort of thing.
Yeah, it's all kind of coming back to me now. I think we played right before Local H.
Right.
If I remember correctly.
I think you are.
And like a really dingy, yeah, it was like a weird dingy, like upstairs room at that
the convention hall or whatever.
Yeah. It was weird. You know what? Maybe I'm confusing that with the Worcester.
Oh, the Palladium.
Yeah. That because there was another thing that was there.
Right.
I don't know. It's all merging together. Maybe that's where we met Local H. I'm not sure. But yeah, it was definitely weird and dingy, weird vibe.
Yeah.
Those things always kind of were.
Totally. Especially when you're not playing at a festival like that, when you're not playing the main stage, it's kind of like, where else can we put this stuff? How about over here?
Oh, those guys? Yeah, just throw them over there.
But I remember being being impressed. Not only was I familiar with your music, it wasn't unintentionally that I saw you, but it was you guys were dialed in. And it seemed to me, because, I mean, at that time, you hadn't released a full length. I think you had just released your EP. I don't know. I just always am impressed when a band kind of has that sort of like, hey, take us seriously vibe. And not like you were being like overly earnest about it or anything like that. But
yeah,
I don't know. It seemed that, like I said, there was a serious tone to what you guys were doing and what you were trying to impress upon people. Was that always kind of the goal from the get-go? Or was it just that was basically the mode you went in when you went on tour?
Yeah, I mean, we really, you know, we liked playing. Nate and I had been in bands together. I can't remember exactly what year that was, but definitely for a few years, you know, we met in high school and so we had played a lot and we knew the importance of just trying to have a really tight band. And so when the format started and it was a two piece, you know, we started trying to figure out, it was kind of like working backwards a little bit. You know, it was just the two of us and we had these songs and we had, even up until the point where we didn't even have a band yet really until after we made the first album. So the first full length. We kind of had to work backwards and like find a band that felt like, you know, these are people that we can really vibe with. And we didn't want it to ever feel stale. Like we always just, you know, obviously you want it to feel tight and be exciting, but it was also really important to us that we, in our situation, since it was kind of unique, maybe not so much anymore, but at the time it was kind of weird. It's like, oh, you guys are just two like dudes and you don't even have a band. That's weird.
Right.
I think it was important. And then especially after the, you know, later on as the album came out, the first album, Interventions and Lullabies, and our label disappeared. Elektra Records just kind of crashed into the ground. We kind of stepped it up even more, you know. It's like, okay, well, all we have is touring. We have to just give it everything we have. We have to go out there as much as we can. And we have to just try to be good. Cause this is really, it's really what we have to, really all we have to offer,
right.
You know, it's like making this music and like no one else is going to get this out there. So we have to do it.
Right. We've got no support.
There's no support. I mean, luckily we have support with, like, you know, we got a great booking agent who's getting us on tours. let's not take that for granted and do everything we can to make sure that that opportunity is being executed properly.
Right. Yeah. You're like, the only thing that we have to go on is obviously our music, which, you know,
yeah.
I know that sounds so, simple and elementary, but it's like, well, that when you peel all the business away, that's kind of all anybody has to stand on.
Yeah. I mean, that should always be the basic fundamental of being in a band. You know, that shouldn't be a shocking thing to say, like, well, all we had was the music, you know, right. But
yeah,
that's, I mean, there's a lot more to it, you know, like,
yeah.
Especially these days, like, you really got to get out there and do a bunch of stuff. So,
sure.
So yeah, it was definitely something that we were very aware of and wanted to, we're constantly striving to get better.
Right. I mean, I think that's interesting because the notion is that, you know, like you mentioned, obviously you'd played, together with Nate for a long time, but you know, you had been, in different bands and iterations of that. Cause you do, I think there is something when you, after you've experienced those local band vibes and you start to be like, hey, like, some people are paying attention to us. We need to take this more seriously than kind of like us sticking around in front of 40 people, like that kind of like who we are. Like we need to put our best foot forward.
Yeah. And we were always from the start, we had pretty, you know, I think the guy that we recorded our first EP with, and we had done stuff with before in some of the other bands, the way that we would talk about it, you know, we never, not like we didn't like enjoy being part of a local scene, but we always just had this desire to be more, you know, we wanted to be professional musicians, and that's ultimately how the format ended up starting, was just the group of people that we were with didn't really have that vision. They just like to play, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we were just like, no, we don't just want to play. Like, we want to be a band. Like, we want to go out on the road. We want to get signed. We want to do,
you want to do it.
We want to do it for real.
Right.
And so, you know, I think when we, you know, when we did our first EP and we had the song called the first single, mm-hmm. that was our attitude.
Right. Like, right. You're like, there's no,
like, this is going to happen.
Right. There's no, and there's no pretension about this. This is manifest destiny.
Yeah. And I just remember the producer being like, you guys are nuts. Right. Like, and he refused to call it that. And he would, when he'd write on little CDRs for mixes, he would call it Delusions of Grandeur.
That's amazing.
That was the thing. And then, you know, whatever, screw him. It worked.
Right. Well, so. I like that attitude, because I definitely think that there's an absolute difference between like being cold and calculating in regards to the approach of your band. Like, you know, you look at a band that starts solely to whatever, make money, you know, and it's pretty apparent. Like, you're able to see a band.
Yeah, but it's not. And I think that that's where he was. I think that's
what
you know, maybe
you
how he was taking it, you right. know, which was, couldn't have been further from the truth, which is why we were sort of like, dude, you just don't get it.
Right.
Like, we don't want to be rich rock stars. Like, we've never wanted to be that, you know, we just wanted to make music full time.
Right.
Like, that was our thing. It's like, we didn't want to work. I didn't want to work at a venue anymore. Like, being the door guy at goth night at 2 a.m.
Right.
And, you know, Nate didn't want to work at his mom's law firm, you know, getting lunch for people. So
right.
That was the goal. It wasn't like we were these cocky, arrogant dudes setting out to take over the world. We just wanted to do our thing.
Right. And that's the distinct difference. I did notice too, where it's like I have a lot of experience within the context of your scene. Like, do you ever remember that band Des Soleils? They're from Arizona.
Yeah.
Okay. So I signed that band to a label that I worked at, and not only because of them, but just like I played in punk and hardcore bands, and we always went out to Arizona and played shows there. You know, played at the Nile and all that stuff. But
oh yeah,
I was
what band were you in?
I was in a band called Taken. We were kind of like melodic hardcore stuff, like '97 till about 2004 or so.
Yeah, I think I worked the door at one of your shows.
I would not be surprised. We if you were working at a venue, I was
yeah, right. Definitely was.
Totally. But I was just always impressed, because it seemed that even though Arizona was, you know, just this random mishmash of suburbs, that you guys always had a scene. I mean, and obviously I will cite Jimmy Eat World as being the purveyors of celebrating your scene, where it was always like, you know, they would always take Ruben's Accomplice on tour. And like, I just always felt this really, I guess, familial vibe of your guys' scenes. Is that an accurate reflection, or is that just something that I'm kind of overly nostalgic?
Yeah, no, it's true. I would say we had a good scene that was split between it was split into two groups. You know, there was, you know, or actually I would say three. There were like the bar bands, you know, like the, especially around that time, like late 90s, there was a pretty heavy, like new metal ish.
Oh yeah.
Thing going down with like bands like Bionic Jive. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but you can imagine what they were like. So, you know, there were a lot, there's a lot of bars in Phoenix and Tempe and Mesa. So there was, you know, there was that whole thing that we definitely weren't a part of. And then there was like the Nile kind of more of the punk pop punk thing going on. And that's what we fell into, you know, cause there were some really great clubs like the Nile and, Tempe Bowl where, you know, like we'd see Jimmy World all the time. It was just a bowling alley and bands would set up in the corner and just play on weekends. And it was awesome. And then there was like the indie rock, like Rubens Accomplice and those kinds of bands. And so it was a good scene, but it was a little divided, which I'm sure it's like that everywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was solid. I mean, everyone still managed to more or less, you know, work together. I mean, no one was really afraid to jump on bills with other people, you know, and everyone kind of just jumped around from club to club. I mean, there were the places that you didn't really want to play, but we would still do it, you know, just to try it.
Right.
But everyone's kind of just playing wherever they could get at that point. So
sure.
But I think it was good. There were some good promoters and good clubs, and it was a pretty healthy place to be in a band, and especially like late 90s, early 2000s, there was a lot of music going on.
Sure. And you can't, I would be remiss to not mention Modified Arts as well. That was also,
For sure.
So were you born and raised in Arizona, or where did you come up?
Yeah, I was born in Glendale, Arizona. I grew up there, the west side of town.
Mm-hmm.
Lived there until I was, you know, basically until I had a car and got kicked out of the house. And then by that point I'd been going to shows and working at the venue. And so I headed to the east side over there and lived there for a while. And now I'm in downtown Phoenix. So I've been here my whole life. Never really gotten out besides touring.
Sure. And I presume but obviously you don't strike me as there are people that are what I would call desert folk, you know, where it's like they get kind of locked into the mentality of being just in their city and not having any sort of context outside of it. Clearly you're not that sort of person. But
yeah,
I presume you do have a sense of like, nah, like Phoenix is the place, man. It's pretty rad here.
I've very much embraced Central Phoenix. There's a lot of stuff about Arizona that's not very desirable, you know, down to like politics and some culture and stuff that I, you know, again, just like everywhere probably, but just some stuff you don't really want to embrace. So you can get kind of stuck in this thing like, oh, you're from Arizona. Like your sheriff is a racist and, you know, totally. That kind of stuff. It's like, okay, cool. Well, I don't have any affiliation with that dude. Like, don't judge me just because I live in Phoenix, you know, that's not really fair.
Right. You hear a news story and then, you can malign everybody that lives in that area.
Yeah. But I mean, Central Phoenix has always been really cool. You know, it's the best, most middle place you can be, you know, everyone, there's all kinds of people around you and everyone is really cool and everyone gets along and it's a good place. Whereas like, if you start venturing out a little bit, like it can get a little hairy and you don't really, you know, that's where all, you know, you start dealing with like, everyone's talking about guns and
sure.
Like that's that whole vibe. And, so that's not really my scene.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's cool. It's a good place. And I'm proud to live here. I'm proud to say I'm from here. I do love it. I have a lot of pride for living in Arizona, but just like anywhere else, you know, it has its moments.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. You have your pros and cons everywhere.
Yeah.
So I mean, I have to ask because you mentioned it, you kicked out of your house. It sounds like there was some strife between the parental units and yourself as you were kind of growing up and developing your identity. Is that true? Or was it just the case of you wanting to kind of get out under their thumb?
Yeah, it's true. It's true a little bit. I mean, it's just, you know, normal teenage angst. I actually was just reliving this conversation with my parents a couple months ago, and we were both seeing it very differently.
I can imagine
how it all went down. Some selective memory probably on both sides, but yeah, there was a moment where my mom was just like, you got to get out of here. And, I was like, okay. And I had an old van that I had bought from my uncle that, our band was supposed to be touring in, and didn't really work very well. So I literally just like threw all my stuff in it and then started driving. And I was like, I don't know where to go. I'm not really sure where to go. So I ended up, it was just this ridiculous, you know, teenage story of like, I was sort of living out of a van for a while when I was, you know, 17 or 18 or whatever, however old I was.
Had you graduated high school yet?
Yeah, I was actually, I didn't go to high school. I was homeschooled, which was pretty unique then, but it seems to be more of a thing now. But,
right.
But yeah, in like, second or third grade, my mom pulled me out of school. I still don't really know why. I guess I could probably ask her.
Right.
But she pulled me out of school, and I just did everything. I would just go get the, she'd go get all the books and stuff from the district that I was living in. And so I was doing the same stuff that all the kids were. And I had a lot of good friends still to this day that's how I met everybody. It was really just the same. The friends I ended up having were the same friends I would have had anyway, because they all went to that school. So we all hung out together, and I would just, you know, they'd go to lunch in high school and I'd go meet them where everyone was going. So it was almost as if I was going, I was just skipping the classes.
Right. You were getting, you were able to reap the benefits of the social structure, but not.
Yeah, I was part of the peer group, but I was the lucky one that didn't have to actually go to school. So,
right. Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have two sisters. One is quite a bit older than me. She's 13 years older than me. So okay. She was already, you know, married and out of the house by the time I was 10 or something. Mm-hmm. Then I have a younger sister. She's 5 years younger than me. She was homeschooled, I think, until like high school. And then she started doing some, some community college classes, and she ended up being a nurse. So she went to ASU and did that whole thing.
Got it. And so what did your parents do for a living? Like how did they obviously provide the food on the table, so to speak?
My dad owned a pest control company, which is pretty great in Arizona. We got a lot of bugs.
You do? Yeah.
Yeah. So he moved out here. They moved out here from California in the 70s.
Okay.
And he started a pest control company, and it got pretty big, and he ended up selling it when I was in quote unquote high school. Mm-hmm. And, but he also still had like you have to be certified to do that.
Sure.
It's just like any trade. So he had like he still does actually. It's like a school.
Okay. That makes sense.
So the school for the training, it's really, I guess, just training, you know, the training for the test that you have to take and you have to, if you're certified, you have to take these tests every year and get a certain amount of credits to make sure everything's still up to date. So he does all that stuff still. So after he sold the pest control company, he continued to do that and
nice.
Still does today. So that was his deal.
And your mom basically obviously took care of you guys, taught you basically.
Yeah. Yeah. She was at home and, but now it's funny, like in the last, I guess, 6 years or so, 5 or 6 years, she started working with my dad. So now she works kind of full time with him.
Oh, nice.
Doing that stuff. But yeah, she was always just at home.
Sure. Well, yeah, if she's homeschooling, she's got to get you educated.
Yep.
And so do you reflect on the homeschooling as being like a positive experience, or do you think that kind of contributed to the strife that you maybe had with your parents because you were spending so much time with them?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, maybe it was a little bit of that. I mean, I think looking back, I really do think it was probably just the same stuff everyone goes through. You know, like I was a really good kid, you know, like I never did drugs and I wasn't getting in any trouble.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was going to ask if you were like, you know, how you were acting out or if it was just the, like you said,
no, it was actually pretty boring. It was just that like I had, and this is what we were talking about. And I was trying to prove a point a couple, you know, whenever we were talking about this with my parents, I was just saying, you know, at that point in life, I had a goal that even then, you know, I knew I had friends around me getting jobs at telemarketing places and at the mall and that kind of stuff. And I was just like, I'm not, and everyone liked music. So we were all in bands and no one could really do anything because they had these jobs. And I was just like, I don't want to do that. It's not that I don't want to work. I just don't want to get sucked into that life, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just kept telling them like, I'm holding out, you know, it's not that I don't want to get a job. I just want to get a job that's in this field because this is what I want to do. You know, and it ended up working out for me because I got the job at the venue.
Right.
And that kind of sparked everything. I mean, that was the, you know, and then while still very much so being in bands and making music that whole time too. So to me, that was like my college, my early job training for what I do now.
Right.
Like I learned a lot of stuff working at that venue, and then I ended up opening and starting a concert promotion company a couple years in with two of the friends that I worked with, because we were just sick of the dude that was running the venue. He was just kind of a sketchy guy. So we're like, we're going to start a concert promotion company. We're going to be the honest guys here because this is ridiculous. So, so it was that kind of thing. It was just the angst was like, I'm not going to go work at, Bed Bath & Beyond. I'm going to go get a job somewhere that's in this field because I know this is where I want to be for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it sounds kind of pleasant, but back then it wasn't. It was just like, well, you have to get a job. So have fun with that.
Well, especially coming from the mentality that I'm sure your parents had, because I think it's definitely emblematic of the generational divide, where it's like, granted, what you were doing now from a not only musical perspective, but from Hello Merch, where it's like that's a trade in essence.
Yeah.
So it's like when you go to your parents and are like, yeah, I want to do this like weird music thing. They're just like, but you don't do anything. Like, what do you mean? Like, I don't understand like what that actually means. And I think that's where the friction comes from. Anytime you're pursuing something creative.
Yeah. And my parents, and to be totally fair, like, especially, I would say both my parents, but especially my dad, like I can very, very distinctly remember as a kid, my dad saying like, you can do whatever you want. Like I'm not going to try to get you to get into pest control. You don't have to go to college if you don't want to, like I would like you to, but whatever you want to do, I'm going to love you, just as much. Like you figure out what you want to do. But at that time, as a teenager, when, you start growing up, it's the parent's responsibility to make sure that you're going to be a responsible adult. And you have to, you have to learn these things when you grow up. It is very important to get those basic, like, life fundamentals instilled in you, like and work ethic and all that stuff. And you have to be able to take care of yourself. So I think it was just a little bit of both, and it's a struggle. And especially now being a parent myself, I've thought about how I'm going to handle that too, because, you don't want to be too lenient with your kids and be like the cool parent all the time, because that can also be pretty detrimental to their future. So I don't blame them for anything at all. I mean, I think what they did was totally fine. I had a plan, and it was maybe sort of ludicrous, from their perspective and even from mine, because it is kind of rare to just say like, well, this is what I want to do, and I'm going to do it, no matter what, because that maybe is a bit of a dream in some sense. It's not the easiest business to get into and be able to survive. So I think it was, everything that went down, there's no hard feelings or anything, like everything. Right. It all makes sense. I just got really lucky and it worked. I had a plan and it worked.
Well,
it's very possible that it couldn't have also.
Sure. I think the difference between a lot of that, because I'm sure you had friends that had the same sort of desires as you did, but I think it all comes down to the execution. And I don't mean execution as far as like being really successful, but just like the sheer planning and effort that it takes to start to move stuff forward, especially from a band where it's like, okay, we got to record a demo, we got to get a show, we got to make a shirt, like all those things. Like once people realize the barriers that are in front of them, that's when you see, some of your peers fall away. Whereas you would be like, well, no, it's fine. It's what I got to do,
And well, yeah. A lot of it is timing, and I say this all the time, a lot, people will ask like, what do I do? How do I do this?
Right.
And, all you can really say is, well, you just have to do it. You really just have to go for it, and you have to be prepared, because I really truly feel like everybody is presented with these, let's pretend you could see them and your life was a set of roads in front of you. Everyone has these opportunities to take a path. And they don't always take them. I've probably had a bunch too that I just missed, that could have sent me into the stars. Like, who knows, like you just never really know. But that's the other thing that comes along with, it's not just luck and it's not just timing. You also have to be able to take a little bit of risk every once in a while. And I think that's what sets a lot of people apart. Some people just like, taking the safe road And I think maybe that's what happened with, you know, a lot of my friends, and it happens with a lot of people. They just want to go get a job and be secure. And that's, I totally understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing, you know, but for me, it's always been like, well, I want to be, I kind of enjoy the fact that I never really know what's around the corner. You know, I don't, I can't, I'm not a good settler. I have to always be kind of cooking up something. So you have to also be able to just, when something is presented, be a risk taker to some degree to say, like, I don't know if this is going to work out, but I'm going to take it and see where it goes.
Right.
And if it, and you have to be aware, like, you know, if this doesn't work out, then I'm just going to go back to where I was and wait for the next one.
Sure. You gotta be comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Exactly.
Right.
It's, and it's not an easy thing to do, but I love it.
Yeah, that's cool. And so then as you started to, like you said, kind of, you know, put together your first bands and stuff like that, you know, what were you attempting to accomplish, like, sonically with your first couple of bands? Were you doing the sort of, you know, by the numbers, pop punk? Were you doing, you know, punk and hardcore? Like, what, avenues were you starting to explore?
Yeah. The first band was called Never Gonna Score, which is,
that's pretty good. It's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, you can probably guess what that was like. So
I can, you could, you probably could have been signed to Drive Thru Records at some point.
That was the plan in that band.
I love it.
We went out, we met with Richard and Stephanie multiple times. We wanted to be on Drive Thru. That was all the rage at that point.
Yeah.
And I kind of fell into that band. It was, Nate had started it with a couple other friends in school. Right before I met him, you know, like weeks before I first met him. And I was just like, oh, you guys are in a band? They're like, yeah, you want to be in it? Like, okay.
Sure.
They had one song, and it was called Rent a Guy. And it was just, and I thought it was so cool because they'd recorded it, and I had never, I didn't even know what that was.
Right.
Like, how'd you do that? Right. Like, how'd you guys record a song? That's crazy.
Totally.
You know, so, I joined it just because I was so excited that they had music that you could listen to. You were just playing it. And so, yeah, I kind of went from there. We did that for a little while, and that we tried, you know, went through some a couple band members, and there was a guy that was sort of the ringleader in that band that, he ended up quitting. He actually ended up quitting at Richard and Stephanie's house from Drive Thru Records.
Ooh, wow.
We were sleeping on their floor, woke up one morning. He was just like, dude, this is like not, this is weird. Like, it's not cool. I don't like this plan. I'm out of here. And so we broke that, you know, when he left, we were just like, okay, we don't really even want to be this band. Like, he's kind of right. Like, this band is, this isn't even the kind of music that we really are into. Like, we can do better than this. So we started, everyone else in that band, just kept going, but we just changed the name, and we started getting a little bit more into, that's when we started getting more into like Jimmy World and the Get Up Kids and,
mm-hmm.
you know, those kinds of like post punk, pop punk kind of bands where it's like, it's melodic, but the guitars still have distortion, and, but there's some bells and pianos on these songs. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. There's more texture to it.
Yeah. It's like a little bit more of the other stuff that we like, which, you know, we, besides liking, you know, punk music, like we also really like the Beatles and,
mm-hmm.
Cat Stevens and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, oh wow, you can kind of, you're just like learning, like, oh, you can mix these two things, these worlds, and then
this is an option.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Like, I'm glad they did.
Right.
So yeah, we moved into that, and then everyone else in that band just had other stuff going on. Like, people started going to college, and people started dropping out, you know, for various reasons. And Nate and I just started, we would just go to this park at night and like hop the fence and just sit in the grass and write these songs. And,
that sounds adorable.
Yeah. It was pretty cute.
sounds very, very, very hippie-esque. Just be like, dude, let's go to the park and jam with some songs, bro.
It was, but it seems like we were trying to be, you know, create this vibe, but it was really like, we didn't have anywhere else to go.
Right. Like, were you going to go to my van or?
Yeah. We just need to go somewhere where we can't be bothered, and we're not going to bother anybody else.
Sure. Sure.
So we started writing, we ended up writing a lot of songs together in that band. Well, not a lot, but, you know, enough to do an EP. Mm-hmm. So we went and recorded this EP, and then right after it came out, it was, something happened, and like, there was some falling out kind of even between Nate and I can't remember exactly what it was, but the band just, nobody, it just wasn't working.
Right. Did you formally put anything out under that, or did you have a moniker for it?
Yeah, the band was called This Past Year, and we put out, and it's funny because I was just like, 5 minutes before we jumped on this guy on Twitter was like, this is the best purchase I ever made. And it was, the homemade CDR of that band that we released at a show. We made 50 of them. It was numbered 1 to 50.
Of course.
And he had like number 19, and I was like, whoa, I haven't seen one of those. Yeah. So that was it. We put out 50 CDs.
Nice.
At one show. And that was all there ever was. So that band broke up and everyone kind of went their separate ways. But Nate had this song that I did in my living room. I recorded on a 4-track, and you know, we hadn't talked for a couple months and I didn't know what to do. So I set up some studio time. I just had this idea. Like, I don't really know what I'm going to do here, but I know that I want to keep making music. So I booked some studio time and I started writing some songs. And then I got a phone call from Nate a couple months later. And he was like, "Hey dude, I have this song. Like, I know we haven't really talked, but someone left a CD in my car and I've been listening to it. And I wrote some lyrics over it. And I think we should go record it." And I was like, "Okay, well, I have studio time booked. Why don't you just come down, you know, on Thursday and we'll try it out." Mm-hmm. And that was, that song was the first single.
That's so funny.
And that's how the format started. We did that. And then we wrote a couple more kind of, you know, in a matter of days. And then we had 5 songs and we recorded that first EP.
Mm-hmm. Not to skip too far back, but like, what was your kind of entry point to more independent music in general? Like, or did you kind of come in through the whole, you know, I'm guessing because like we're roughly around the same age, you know, with the whole sort of like NoFX, Green Day, Offspring stuff, or was there a different trajectory for you that you, kind of got piped into?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, it started with Weezer, strangely enough.
I got
into Weezer when they first came out. I'm like, "What is this band? This is crazy." So I loved Weezer, and then I started, you know, obsessively branching out to bands related to them. So then it was like Weezer and That Dog and Chopper One,
right?
And you know, Teenage Fan Club and whatever bands were related.
Ozma, right?
The Rentals and Ozma, yeah, those kinds of bands. And then I start, you know, obviously at that time watching Alternative Nation and 120 Minutes on MTV and seeing Green Day and The Offspring. And then I went and bought The Offspring's first record because I'm like, I don't want to listen to this new Offspring, but I heard that they're...
Give me Ignition.
Yeah, I heard Ignition's really great. And so I still remember I was on a trip with my mom and my aunt. We were going to Canada to visit my aunt's grandma or something. And I was in South Dakota and two of my cousins were there. And I was like, "I'm going to buy this Offspring." We were at a Kmart. And I'm like, "I'm going to buy this Offspring CD." And they're like, "Yeah, you should buy that. It's great."
Mm-hmm.
So I bought the Offspring CD and then we got to Canada and Much Music was on. We were just watching Much Music all the time back when it was just a Canadian channel. And NoFX was being interviewed by somebody. And like, and they're like, "Oh yeah, NoFX is..." They were like kind of, they knew the kind of, you know, the punk bands. So then I went and bought some NoFX CDs and then, it went into Rancid and Operation Ivy and all that stuff. So, I mean, that whole time, like all those bands were starting to get kind of in the mainstream anyway.
Right.
So I started, that led to, you know, going even further. Like now I'm listening to all the Lookout Records. Then it started being about the labels. So I'd just find the cool labels that were releasing the bands. Then I'd buy everything on Lookout, like Groovy Ghoulies and,
sure,
you know, Screeching Weasel and 15.
Right. Right.
All these bands. So it was that. And then, you know, Asian Man Records and Drive Through Records. And then it was, Caroline or whatever, you know, whatever. Then it was just about going to the record store and looking for the record labels and just buying everything they had. That's how it started. And then I started going to shows and it was just a snowball from there.
I just like, I like the way that you put that because, it does become, you become obsessed and you get these weird notions. Cause you know, I mean, a lot of our friends, like they, you watch them kind of like where their limit ends, where they're just like, "Yeah, like I'm cool. Like I don't need any more." But then there's people like you and I who are just like, "No, like there's a never ending well here. You can keep searching and searching and finding more."
That was our favorite. I mean, there's a record store here called Zia Records and it was a chain and that's what we would do. I mean, we'd go there. So, I mean, multiple times a week, we'd go get Taco Bell. I was the first one who could drive. We'd go, everyone would jump in my car. We'd go get Taco Bell. We'd eat in the parking lot. And then we would just go basically loiter
right.
and see a records. And we would just, you would walk down the aisle one by one and you would just go looking for something that would stick out, you know, the spine, like what's going to jump out at you today.
Sure.
And then you do that. And then you go back 2 days later and you'd find like the Voodoo Glow skulls or something. Totally. I'm going to try this out. Cause there was no other way to hear it. Mm-mm. Like there wasn't the internet. So you really just like, I'm going to buy this and see if I like it. And it's like, oh, who's this band Bracket? Like they look kind of cool.
Sure.
Buy this and see what's up. And,
how about Diesel Boy? Let's try this.
Like, sure. Yeah. Everything. So, you know, you figure out what you like, you know, and you'd buy the, you know, I'd get like, oh, I've heard about Face to Face. Like, no, I don't like Face to Face, but I like, mm-hmm. Pulley. Like Pulley's cool. It's kind of the same.
Right.
Thing. It's just, you know, I was more about the melodic bands. So, you know, bands like Bracket were really great and bands like Face to Face, maybe not so much. It was like a little too, not that they weren't melodic, but I definitely had my thing, you know,
sure.
Anybody that was doing anything interesting with melodies, that's really what stuck with me the most.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Pardon the interruption, but I would like to tell you about Harry's Razors because they are kind enough to help support this show. So it is their 3-year anniversary, and that is incredible because what they've done is they've disrupted the razor industry. They are taking all of their focus and effort on you, the consumer, and trying to make the shaving experience easy and cheap because they will give you 3 expertly crafted 5-blade German razors, a handle, and shave cream for just $10 with the offer code 100WORDS. So that's the number, 100WORDS. So I've been in the shave game for a while, even though I was dumb and I didn't know how to shave until I was about 25 years old. Harry's is an incredibly close shave. The biggest thing for me is quickness, because I've shaved with a safety razor for quite some time, and honestly, it's kind of a 10 to 15 minute process, maybe a little bit less. I'm exaggerating a little, but Harry's, dude, I'm in and out, going against the grain, going with the grain. It's incredible. It's like it takes me less than 3 minutes to do a complete tight shave that makes my wife go, hey, like you did a really good job today. I'm like, hey, thanks. I appreciate that. So, and what makes Harry's special? Like I said, it's quality, price. So it's like factory direct prices. They cut out the middlemen so they don't, you can't buy the stuff in stores, and it ships right to your door. So that's why they can sell it to you at half the price. And over 1 million people have already made the switch, and thousands more do every day. So seriously, why pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you can get them for half the price at Harry's.com? The Harry's starter set is an amazing deal. And for just $15, you get a razor, shave cream, and 3 razor blades. But I can give you $5 off that. It's crazy. Harry's doesn't do sales, but the fact that they're doing this right now means you should jump on it. So $5 off your first order with promo code 100words. Please stop overpaying for a great shave. Go to harrys.com right now. That's harrys.com and enter the code 100words at checkout.
Growing up doesn't mean you need to outgrow heavy metal. And now for discerning metalheads everywhere, there's a podcast just for you. Metal Brainiac is the smartest half hour in heavy metal. There's no beer or bro talk, and we leave Satan at the door as we dive into serious conversations with top metal artists. We dig into the creative process and explore the challenges of expression when people can't make out the lyrics. I'm Matt Pykin, the host of Metal Brainiac, and you can find us every week on iTunes and wherever you find your favorite podcast. And also at metalbrainiac.com.
I mean, and that's why the low-priced samplers of that era from, you know, 95 to like 2002, 2003 were so crucial. Yeah. It was like, dude, I could buy this for $5 and it's 27 songs and I'm going to find 20 bands that I like on there.
Dude, I want to bring that back, but then I guess everybody already sort of does that with playlists now, but that was like so crucial. Those compilations were just like a godsend.
Because they're sitting right there next to the register usually, and you're just like, I got $5, sure.
It would save you a lot of time and money, because maybe you had been holding, you know, not so sure if you're going to pull the trigger on this this Unwritten Law CD.
Right.
And then you hear them on the compilation, you're like, oh no, I'm glad I didn't buy that one. I don't really like them.
Totally. You're like, I got burned one too many times by, buying the Donuts and Glory CD or whatever, like just the most random stuff. And you're like, oh, that's not good, but that's really good. So
Yeah. That was great.
And so then kind of, fast forwarding a little bit to the, once you started to receive, attention from, record labels, and you started to see that your shows started to have more people as far as in regards to like the format and stuff, Was it easy for you to kind of get that attention, or was it always kind of, was it a learning process for you just because, you had been used to the sort of local show vibe? Or was it kind of like, hey, this is rad because this is what I've been looking for?
It was cool. I mean, those bands, even though they were terrible, the ones that we were in before, they were still pretty decently sized local bands. So it was, I've probably said this before somewhere, but I think by the time we got to the format, everyone just was like, this is sort of refreshing because we like these guys, but the music was kind of stupid, but we were just sort of supporting them because we liked them. So we had a pretty good following anyway in town. Mm-hmm. So I think so what ended up happening was, word started catching a little bit when we first started the format, and it was sort of a whirlwind. So like right away, the shows were pretty big. I mean, I think we sold out our first show. Wasn't like a huge place, but it was like the basement of the Nile.
That's like 300 people. It's great.
Yeah, it was still good. And then, we sold out a modified show, and it just all within, a couple weeks of each other. And so that whole thing happened really fast. I mean, we got signed, really super quick. Mm-hmm. And so it was a little strange, but, to be swept away into this major label thing and, get a nice advance and like go, all of a sudden we're recording in Capitol Records studio where the Beach Boys were recording. We're with Josh Freese and he's doing drums for us. And we're like, what's going on? This is crazy.
Right.
But then, you get like lifted up super high, but then you immediately fall down in your face because that's just all a facade. Like that's just what money will get you. Is like somebody kind of funding this idea of like going and making an album, and you start getting these hopes of like, oh, this is great. Like, I still remember thinking like just being so unaware of reality within that business, because you just know what you've heard from third parties, you know, just thinking like, man, are we going to be like touring in planes and like all the stuff's going to be happening? It's gonna be crazy.
Right.
You know, like, and that's, I mean, like daydreaming stuff, obviously not like reality, but you just have this thought like, this is my whole life is going to change forever because we just got signed to this label.
Yeah. It's at your fingertips.
Yeah. Cause you know, cause it is, I mean, that is a possibility. So it's not like that's too far out of the realm of possibility, but for a lot of people it's not. I mean, tons of bands get signed to major labels every day, you know, and very few actually can take it to that level, mm-hmm. you know, where they're like superstars to some degree. So, you know, yes, like it was weird but it was a facade, because when we went out on the road after making the first record, like we immediately went out on tour, uh-huh. and it was like a WB network sponsored, like cheesy tour.
Oh, that's amazing. WB network.
So yes. Cool. Yeah. So we're like, you know, we just made this album, we're like all excited and hyped up. And then we get on the road and we suddenly realize like, oh, nobody knows who we are.
Right. We got a lot of work nationwide to do.
Yeah. It's like, you know, there's some video of us on YouTube somewhere that someone sent me a while back, and it's hilarious. Like, we're playing at this college outside on the lawn, you know, like a little amphitheater kind of a thing. And there's like four people standing there. Like, one of them's maybe paying attention. There's like a drunk girl dancing over in the corner somewhere.
Sure.
And we're just playing. And, you know, it's like, that was the reality. Like, so you get these, you know, these notions in your head that everything's going to be amazing, but that's not the reality at all.
Right.
And that's when we immediately were like, okay, we got a lot of work to do here.
Sure.
And we knew it, but you know, you just get wrapped up in the idea that just because you get signed, like everything's going to change, and that's not how it works.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. There's a lot of hard work that, like, I always, at the record labels that I worked at, it was always one of those things where I tried to give them that speech where it's like, hey, just because you get signed, this is where the hard work begins now. Like, you're not on easy street at this point, like where everybody else is going to do work for you. It's like, this is just a partnership that we need to work on together. Now you just have more people to help you out along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. And we knew that. And especially right. coming from like the, you know, I don't know, I guess the punk scene somewhat, you know, like we knew what we were getting into, but it's still, you can get wrapped up in that when it's, right. when you're faced with it, when it's in front of your face. It's like, well, we know that, you know, everyone's been singing about the music industry and selling out and all this stuff and how bad it is. You know, Jeff Ott's been singing about Green Day for the last 3 years. It's terrible. Like how he lost his friends and
totally
whatever. But so, you know, we had that sort of punk rock attitude of like, this is probably not going to work out, but
we got to try it. Right.
Let's try it. Why not? Like, whatever.
What was the, because obviously, I mean, that song did have some, permanence in regards to, not only because it's a really, really good song as far as the first single is concerned. But obviously you had some, you know, radio airplay and that sort of stuff. When were, cause I'm sure there's maybe like one or two surreal moments as you were kind of, letting that chaos swirl around you. You know, is there anything in particular that sticks out, during that time where it was like, holy shit, like this, people are really identifying with this song, and then like we have to play that last because otherwise people will leave and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, really early on it, because that was the first song that we put out.
Sure.
And that was the first time that, and the internet had, you know, not that it had just come out, but I would say by that time, you know, it was starting to get more accessible on a greater scale. You know, like you could upload an MP3 somewhere at that point, you know, in 2002. And somebody could download it for 20 minutes and then listen to it. So that, yeah, that was the first, that song was just being the first one that sort of got spread around the country, I think, from the EP, and started getting picked up on blogs, you know, music blogs started happening. And that was, you know, there was a website called The Scout, and the first single was on there, and I think a lot of people heard it there. So,
oh, that's right. I remember that. My friend Kevin did that site.
Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So, that was, you know, that was the one thing, like we would go do these little shows and that was really the only song that anybody knew, you know, and people would sing along and they do the little clapping parts. And, and so it just, yeah, it became that song that you got to play last, even though it was never really even a proper single, never really had any national airplay. It just became like a tour favorite because
That's funny because that's totally not the impression. Like I don't know, that song just seemed to pierce the veil. But wow, okay, so then
yeah, it seems like it did, but it was just a thing. I think that's just how everybody discovered us, was because of that song initially.
Right.
And it grew, you know. It's like the first group of people that knew who we were passed that around to enough friends who passed that around to enough friends,
right,
that became the identifier of our band, you know. Sure. So
that's interesting. So
that's what happened. Yeah. I mean, we didn't even do a video for it. We didn't do it. I mean, cause our label literally,
fell apart around you.
Our album came out in October of 2003 and the label was done, I think, by February of the next year.
Right.
And wow. So nothing happened. It was, you know, fourth quarter. They're like, oh, we'll just wait, like go out on tour. We'll wait until the first quarter to start working it after the holidays. And then they were done.
Sure. That's crazy. Over.
So it was just, you know, nothing happened with that record. We didn't release a single on that record at all.
Right.
It's weird.
Yeah, I know that is. And then kind of, you know, focusing on the, you know, your transition out of obviously like the format, once that started to, dissipate, was it one of those things where, because obviously since most people that play in bands, attach an identity, like, you know, you're Sam from the format and like, that's how so many people know you. Was it difficult for you to kind of, I guess, transition out of that identity, so to speak, and kind of figure out what you want to do after that? Or was it just a matter of like, all right, well, now this is the next sort of step? How was that transition?
It was kind of weird at first because, yeah, I did have that idea in my head for a long time. I would say even just until recently that I didn't really want to milk that, you know, to get to do something else. Like I didn't want to be I'm Sam from the format, but I realized, you know, pretty recently that, well, that's who I am, you know, like I was in that band. That band's still, people are still aware of it. People still listen. There's new fans, there's still things. And so I think it's okay to say, you know, even to use that as exposure for my new record that's out, I think is okay. You know, because that, how else is anybody going to know who I am? You know,
sure.
Like that's really the only thing I can tell people to get them to remember, you know. It's like, I was in a band that broke up 8 years ago.
Right.
You know, if someone could be like, oh, the new Sam Means album's out. And someone would go, who?
Right.
But if someone said the new Sam Means from the format, you know, he's a dude from the format, his album's out, then, you know, a couple of ears are going to perk up and be like, oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. Oh, I remember him. Yeah. I remember that band.
Yeah. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that really. And, so yeah, but I mean, but for a long time, I didn't want to associate myself with that just because I felt like maybe it was wrong. You know, it's like, well, the band's done. I don't want to just keep, you know, hammering on that point.
Right. Dipping into that well constantly.
Yeah. I don't want to just keep saying that, you know, introducing myself to people as Sam from the format.
Sure.
I don't know if you remember, but I'm Sam from the format.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So
let me refresh your memory.
Yeah. So I have a burrito and a large Dr. Pepper. Thanks. So yeah, I didn't do that kind of stuff, but,
right.
But it is, I mean, it's who you are, you know. It's part of my history and it's something I still think of so fondly and I'm so proud of it. So, I mean,
yeah,
who cares?
Sure. No, I mean, you can't be the people that sort of shed their, well, I'm trying to think where it's like, okay, I look at, you know, that band Sleigh Bells, where it's like the whatever, they're definitely not as cool as they once were, but it's like the guitarist used to play in that hardcore band Poison the Well.
Yeah.
And it's like, he, you know, he mentioned it, people asked him about it, but there was definitely that sort of like, oh, that's what I did as a kid vibe. And it's like, you know, you don't have, like, Poison the Well was a really meaningful band to a lot of people. Like, you don't have to sort of be like, oh, because of that, I'm now in this world, I can't look at that time and reflect upon it like exactly what you're doing fondly.
Yeah. I mean, I think of it as bigger picture. I mean, a lot of people just, they don't want to keep harping on that, on their past, you know? So I heard an interview the other day on a podcast with this dude, Mike Binder. He was a comedian.
Sure.
He was like a stand-up comedian for years, and then he started directing movies and writing movies and stuff. And he was pretty big on that. You know, that conversation was interesting to listen to because, you know, he's like, I don't want that. It's just so far. You know, that was 30 years ago. Like, so much more has happened to me. You know, like, we should be talking about my movies and not stand-up stuff, you know. But so that kind of opened my eyes a little bit more, even hearing that, just being like, well, it's just kind of weird to me, you know, because I don't know. Like, if someone's interested in any avenue of your life, it's just, it's a bigger picture of who you are. Like, you shouldn't try to, like, you know, tuck something away just because you're working on something new. Like,
you should be happy about it. Right.
It's the story of your life. You know? Totally. Like, you want people, especially when you're trying to sell music and promote something, it's like, you know, if that's what somebody wants to talk about, like, that's amazing that anybody wants to talk to you about anything.
Totally. You're like, oh wait, you're interested?
Like, okay, the concept that anybody would want to talk to me for any reason whatsoever is fascinating to me.
Totally.
So if someone wants to talk about the format, or they want to talk about Hello Merch, or they want to talk about, you know, Hello Apparel or whatever, any of the stuff that I've done, I'm down to talk about whatever.
Right.
At this point, because it's not talking about those things. It's talking about me. Mm-hmm. So that's my life. And that's,
right, it's flattering.
That's all there is to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I did want to hit on Hello Merch because that.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This summer, click into Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot and get after those outdoor projects with some serious cordless power from Ryobi. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. Leaves and debris are no match for the 40-volt power of the Ryobi leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Tidy up those flower beds and keep your walkways looking sharp with Ryobi's 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Yard work done and done. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at your cordless power source, the Home Depot. Shop now at the Home Depot or homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Hello?
Yo, you got it.
Sorry. Technical difficulties. Somebody just called. I'm on my phone. Someone just called me on my phone.
Yeah, no worries. I was going to say with, hitting on Hello Merch, obviously to me, watching your trajectory, it's a very logical extension that you would be able to want to offer these services because you yourself have come from that position of like, oh, we've always worked with merch companies that are, you know, didn't know what they were doing or whatever. Am I right in that kind of trajectory for you to be like, hey, this seems like a cool thing? And then obviously Hello Apparel kind of, sprung out around that. Was that kind of the sort of germ of an idea?
Yeah, that was all very natural. I mean, the format had a really low scale merge company that was just, we were operating just for ourselves. You know, probably for the last 4 years or so, the band, we had a little warehouse set up, and we, you know, we were packing orders when we were off tour, and we had a friend that was kind of holding down the fort while we were on tour. And so, you know, it was working out really well for us. We were doing good, and it was a good outlet for us to have to just kind of stay on the road, you know, just help pay the bills, especially when we weren't touring, we weren't making money. It was cool to be able to have a steady income stream from selling shirts in between. So even then, I mean, I always wanted to make it more of a thing, because we'd go out with these bands and they would be in similar situations that we were in prior, where they weren't, you know, they weren't getting shirts, and, or they were just terrible. They weren't what they wanted, or they were in this endless debt cycle with merch companies. And, you know, I wanted to help. So
yeah, you saw a need and you filled it.
Yeah, I saw a need, but at that time I just couldn't do it. I was just too busy. There's too much going on. And I just felt like if I try to take on anything else here, I'm not going to be doing any good. You know, there's very realistic possibility that we could end up, you know, hurting these bands just as much as anyone else's, just because we can't give them the time that they're going to need to do it. So, yeah, I mean, when the band broke up and having that infrastructure in place, I didn't have anything else to do. And I just thought like, well, this is the time to do it. I already know how to do this. I want to do this. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. So I should at least just get this rolling, you know, because there was really no startup. It was already there. So it was really just about calling a few people and just being like, hey, I'm doing this now. Do you want to?
Right. Let's take this seriously now.
Let's try it. So it just, you know, it kind of built very naturally on its own. I mean, for years, all the bands that came in were all just word of mouth. They just kept growing and growing and growing, from one person to the next person to the next person. So yeah, I mean, it's been a really cool thing. We work with a lot of cool bands, and they're all, you know, we treat everybody like they should be treated, you know? Right.
Well, and from an outsider's perspective, it feels very organic, and I know that's like an overused term, but it definitely as exactly what you're saying, where it's like it does seem like I could probably connect you to each of those bands or merch stores that you offer to be like, oh yeah, I see why that happens, because Sam knows Chase, and I see those connections already. So it's like, it does feel like you said, just kind of essentially an extension of yourself.
Yeah, it's all connected. It's all a big family tree. It's like the genealogy of the bands. You can trace back to the format in some way.
Right.
So yeah, it's cool. I mean, I'm definitely really happy to still be doing this. I'm glad that it's become what it is. You know, it's not like some huge major thing, but
sure.
But it's good. I mean, it's fun.
How weird is it with the obviously the Hello Apparel side of things? Because you know, I mean, it's one of those things where I've purchased a large amount of things from you, especially for my wife and my kid. And they, you know, it's like when I tell my wife, it's like, oh yeah, it's, you know, it's a Sam dude from the format. She's like, oh, like that's cool. But then obviously there's people that are coming into it that, you know, could care less that you ever played in a band.
It's turned into a whole different thing than, I mean, the whole, it's funny how it even started. It was just, you know, it was just kind of like how I started the merch thing.
Right.
Just like, it was already there. I just wasn't doing it. You know, I just wasn't expanding upon it. And so that was the same thing with the clothing company. It was just like, we have the ability to create an online store. We're printing stuff constantly. I'm designing stuff constantly. So why am I not doing this? Like, you know, there was one particular thing, like I saw my friend Joe, who does all the screen printing for us, he was printing like 5,000 shirts for this order. This kid that just started a clothing company for a company called The Fancy. They had this like subscription box service, and I was just like, that kid sold 5,000 shirts in like a second to these people. Like, that's nuts. Like, I want to do that. So I just made it my goal. I'm like, I'm gonna email all these people and just see what the deal is. Like, you know. So I emailed The Fancy, and I got in touch with somebody, and I just had whipped up a few designs with Hello on it. And it was just like, hey, I just started this clothing company.
like yeah, everything, like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah. Like, yeah. yeah. P.S. It was 10 minutes ago. Right. I just started this clothing company. Like, what do you think? And they liked it. They're like, yeah, well, let's do one. Like, let's do the sweatshirt in one of the boxes. Can you get them done in a couple weeks? And I was like, yeah. Okay. Like scrambling to get a bunch of stuff printed and meet this deadline for this dude, but it worked. And that's how it started. And then from there, my wife was like, dude, we should make kids clothes. Like, I know all these girls, you know, that have blogs, and Instagram started getting, you know, kind of started going off around that time. And I can start sending stuff to people. If they like it, maybe they'll post about it. And so it was the same thing. It just sort of happened. It was that, you know, like I was talking about before, it's just that opportunity that I saw, and that sort of risk of like, well, why not email these guys? Like, maybe they'll be into it.
Right.
And they were. And so, but that's the thing, is like, you have to be able to execute it. Like, when you take those opportunities, you have to be able to say like, yeah, I'm okay. Someone just gave me this opportunity. Now I actually have to do it. And so luckily, you know, everything kind of fell into place enough that we were able to pull it off. And from there, it just sort of built on its own,
right,
you know, through a community of people. And it turned into this thing that never had anticipated it to be, where it was like, yeah, it's very much centered around young moms and kids and, you know, young parents and matching outfits,
right,
and
right,
all that stuff. But who would have ever thought? But it just was the timing. It worked out.
Totally. Totally. And I just like it too, because obviously it's stripped of any, you know, ego. It's not like it has anything to do with your own personal background at all. You know, it's like, I like it when people can, be known in two different fields, where it's like, you can be known in the, you know, family blogging ecosystem without anybody have any idea the fact it's like, oh, that dude played in a band. You know, it's like, I love those duality, scenarios where people can insert themselves into two completely separate worlds, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Two last things I want to hit on before you left was the, I'm really glad that you called your solo project your own name. Cause I do feel that when people, did you wrestle with that idea of like, should I call it my name? Should I call it, you know, like, you know, some weird tangential connection to you? Or was it always like, no, I'm just going to call it myself.
Yeah. I mean, it does. Yeah. Like the stuff that I'd done in the past, you know, which is very minimal and like lo-fi, zero budget kind of stuff that I was just doing on a laptop, you know, that stuff that I just sort of put out there on a whim. There was never really any thought of calling it anything else. Cause it was really just what it was, you know. It's like, oh, well, I'm just doing these things. I'm not trying to start a new band. So I'm not going to try to, you know, create this facade of a group when it's just me. But I did consider it a little bit when I was doing this last record, just because I felt like it was a little bit of, you know, more of a big deal, I guess, and at least in my mind.
Right.
Like, I want this is my first full length record. So it's kind of like starting over in my solo career, like or at this point, really trying to take it seriously or take it somewhere that I hadn't in the past. So I thought about it for about, I don't know, maybe 5 seconds.
Okay. I was going to say, if you actually workshopped a name.
No, it was a real quick conversation with myself. It was just like, should I call it something else? No. Yeah. I don't disagree with people doing that, but you know, it is just me. It's right. The record's a pretty personal record. And it's, you know, I don't know. I always think it's a little weird when people do that, just because it gets kind of confusing.
It is. Yeah. I mean, like you said, you, I understand why people do that. They want to peel away, you know, or maybe not even peel away, but they actually want to put a facade, like where they can, you know, maybe adapt into a character or something like that.
I think you can, you know, maybe it's a little bit easier to build from like a marketing perspective, to build a little bit more hype in some way, that there's this new band instead of there's this new guy. I don't know. Maybe that's not even true, but I've thought about that a little bit when I've seen some people, you know, kind of branch out and do solo projects. It's a little, the way people look at you and you know, judge you good or bad is maybe a little bit skewed from how they would if you had a band name, which is kind of a weird thing to think about, but I do think it's true somewhat. Yeah. People kind of look like, oh, that's just like a little, you know, that dude's going solo and it's his name, you know?
Right.
Whereas like, if you can create that facade of like tricking people into thinking that you're a band, it's like, oh, it's just another cool band.
Sure. It's like it's what you were referencing earlier, where it's like the illusions of grandeur, where it's just like, oh, yeah. I'm bigger than just my name.
Yeah,
totally. And I was, I'm actually pulling from another podcast that you did with a friend of mine, the Chris over at Modern Vinyl, because you mentioned something that just got me so incredibly thrilled that I had to bring it up, where, and I think this is very emblematic of touring bands, because you just dive so far into this rabbit hole of, you know, George Norrie, Coast to Coast Radio, Art Bell. Like, I just, anytime anybody talks about that, I immediately am like, like, we're best friends, because it's like, it's such a, people know about it that haven't toured, but it's a very small amount of people.
Yeah, I mean, you were in a band, so you knew exactly what I was talking about.
Dude, for sure. And it's just like I love the picture you painted in regards to crossing state lines, having to find the other radio station that was carrying it, yeah. And just being like, oh, dude, I have to listen to this person talking about this alien invention or whatever. It's like, yeah, I just love the notion of coast to coast and this weird, like, okay, only truckers and touring bands really like dive yeah. super into this guy.
Definitely. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I was super excited. I don't know how much you've been following that lately, but yeah, I was really excited because Art Bell came back.
Yeah.
For like the 300th time. He came back sometime last year, I think last summer, but he was only on for a few months. Did you hear any of that?
I knew he did. I didn't hear any of it. Cause like just with the amount of podcasts that I listen to, it's really difficult for me to try to like, find a patch of, you know, 4 hours because obviously yeah. the broadcasts were that long.
Well, yeah. Now at this point I fall asleep to Coast to Coast. Oh, like that's what I do. So I go, when I go get in bed at, you know, 2 a.m, that's the only way I can get to sleep.
So good. So
it's like my bedtime story, you know, right. basically. So I put in my earbuds, put one in one ear and put the other ear on the pillow and just zonk out listening to George Norrie.
That's amazing.
That buffer music they have in between the ads. But,
right.
But Art Bell came back for a while and it's so weird. Cause I can't tell if it was just like he just wanted to get out again.
Uh-huh.
But he started getting these like threats, I guess, on air. Like people were shooting, like there were gunshots around his house and like,
whoa.
He was being watched and all this stuff. And it seemed very theatrical.
Right. Like, this is kind of like War of the World sort of stuff.
Yeah. And then there was a point where he's just like, you know, I went and listened one night and all of a sudden it was this woman on. And she's like, Art Bell's done. I'm going to continue the show in his place. He's feared for the safety of his family. He's getting too many threats. And I'm like, what is going on? It's crazy. Yeah. So he's gone now. So it's a bummer, but luckily I still got Coast to Coast. I open up their little iPhone app and zonk out to it every night.
That's absolutely incredible. Yeah. That world is just so, ripe with people becoming obsessed with it. It's so easy. And then like, you know, once you discover that, that's when you start to, you know, dive even deeper down those conspiracy theory and, you know, time traveling and,
Oh man. Yeah. I can't even tell you how many time travel books I bought on tour.
Have you ever messed with was it the John Titor or whatever?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've been down that road.
I love that. Well, I think we could probably do a separate podcast just reviewing all of the conspiracy.
Yeah,
theories.
There's some good stuff.
That's spectacular. Well, I will. I'll wrap it up. But thank you so much, Sam. This has been fun, and I think it paints a very nice picture of a person who's done a bunch of different stuff within this weird independent music world. So thank you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, dude.
So thank you very much for checking out this episode, and thank you very much to Sam. What a great guy, right? I mean, I know I say that about. Well, basically everybody that I bring on the show, because realistically, I make sure that the people who appear on this show are good individuals, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're all in this weird independent music world together. And, you know, frankly, there are some bad apples in the bunch. I don't want to focus on those people. So that's why I feel a little redundant when I'm saying, oh, good people. So anyways, but that's just, I'll get off my soapbox. But thank you very much for checking out the episode. Visit 100wordspodcast.com. And for those of you that haven't jumped on it, the Amazon affiliate code, click on that link in the show notes here, and you will be able to give a little kickback to us, because I appreciate that. And it makes everything, my life so much easier when I actually see a little bit of money from this. And I can justify to my wife, like, hey, I promise that, like, I'm paying for something of this. And it's not just me by myself, quote unquote, wasting my time. So do that up. I appreciate that. And next week, I'm not going to tell you the guest. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to do that. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to do that. It is Steve, and I am butchering his last name. I promise I will do some practice before next week. Steve Kleiseth from Further Seems Forever, Strong Arm, Shahilud. I've been wanting to get this dude on for quite some time, and he's a champion video game player. Did you know that? Well, you'll find out a ton more next week, and thank you very much. I will see you soon, and please be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com. Shh.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.